KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Good evening or good morning to y'all, good day to you, wherever you might be, whomever you may be. Welcome to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan, and it's good to be here with y'all tonight, and excited about the show, because my friend Ken Steadman is going to be on with me in just a little bit here. But first, I would normally say thank you to Corey and New Wave Radio Theater, which is on an hour before this program every Monday, but Corey's not in tonight, and I actually did the program for her, and we did a couple of pieces of radio theater from the Old West, and it was a pleasure. I like doing it, and it's a great program, probably better when Corey does it, but anyway, I did the best I could, and I hope you all enjoyed it. Before that, Kelvin and Eric the Red doing it up, jazz plus blues equals a cure for cancer. Tech Radio at 6 p.m., keeping us up on the crazed world of high technology. And Jeff Wheeler starts things off every Monday from 3 to 5 p.m. good music, good talk, good news. You know, there's a news show in between there, too, I should always say, at between 5 and 6, the news at 5, Monday night edition on, of course, Monday at 5 o'clock. But anyway, it's a nice Monday night, kind of cool, but warming up, and it's a pleasure to be here with y'all on Radio Orbit, the 14th of April. You're listening to it here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, your imagination station. Okay, thank you to Nikki Scully. Last week, I had a nice time talking with Nikki, and I hope you all enjoyed the show. If you missed the program, it is up there on the website, and last week's program, as well as any of the other programs that have been on over the last few years, you can find them all after the act. They're on the web, www.mikehagan.com, in the program archives. Take a look around in there. Maybe you'll find something you like, and if you do, maybe share it with someone else if you get the gumption, okay? All right, tonight, as I mentioned earlier, my good friend, Kent Stedman, he is the wizard behind a website that is at the address www.cyberspaceorbit.com, cyberspaceorbit.com. You can link over to his site from my site, and many of you who are listeners to the program, regular listeners, would know Kent's site and probably have it bookmarked somewhere in your machines there. But at any rate, cyberspaceorbit.com, Kent Stedman, the bard, one of my most amazing guests that I think I ever have on the program. He's been on Orbit many, many times over the years, and just an incredibly cool and enlightened person. One of my best friends, and also the author of this amazing website that is just an absolute library of Alexandria on the web in many ways. Goes back many, many years now, probably 10 years of archives now on Orbit. All you got to do is keep clicking that little arrow that sends you backwards in time at the bottom of his front page. At any rate, Kent Stedman is an amazing guy, and lots of things to talk about, as always, with him. Never know where we'll go, because we really don't plan the programs. We never have Kent on the show. We just sort of see what's going on and just start talking to each other and see what the topics sort of come up and what we decide to talk about. But we'll do that in just a little bit here, probably about a half an hour. I'll call him maybe a little before the midnight hour here, okay? All right, once again, on the web, MikeHagan.com, you can link over to Kent's site, and you can get a feel for what he's up to, maybe get a glimpse of some of the things that we may be talking about later on. Kent's site has a lot of interesting information up there on the front page right now, and I'm sure some of that stuff will come up during the conversation, okay? All right, one more time, cyberspaceorbit.com, Kent Stedman, in just a bit, all right? Okay, we'll do space weather and a few other things, probably with Kent, and we're going to hear music tonight from a group of Ecuadorian musicians that call themselves Quechua Mashis. And they're an amazing group of musicians that I met in Seattle a couple of years ago, actually, with Kent. And I was going to feature their music last week on the program, but I left the CD in my computer at my other job. This really isn't a job. But at my working job during the day last week, so I didn't get to play the music for you last Monday. So I was going to do it then. I will do it tonight, and we will feature music throughout the program tonight from Quechua Mashis, this great bunch of guys from Ecuador playing music from the high Andes. So we started things off with a song there that's called Malku de los Andes, and we'll play another one for you here that is called Tincuna, and let's see, what's the clock say? 11 minutes after. Yeah, I'll take a little break here and play some more music from Quechua Mashis, and then come back and talk with you all in just a bit, okay? Okay, it is Mike, and you are listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, if I can get my mouse to work here. Thank you. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan, and that was Kichwa Mashis with a song called Tinkuna. All right, tomorrow is tax day. Yes, it is, the 15th of April. Tomorrow is tax day. Tune in at 6 p.m. for an evening edition tax day special. Host Mark Heim will offer you the opportunity to call in and share your thoughts on taxes. Hardly anyone likes paying taxes, but how do you feel about the way your tax money is being spent? Where would you rather see it go? Do you think the current tax system is fair? Please share your ideas. Plan to participate in this community forum on the air. Don't miss this exciting evening edition. Tomorrow, that's Tuesday, the 15th of April, 6 to 7 p.m. right here on KOPN, 89.5 FM. That'll be a interesting show. I know what I think about taxes. Phooey. Here's what I want for taxes. Zero. None. Zilch. Nada. Niet. Nichts. Nothing. The way the Constitution clearly spelled it out. You can have an excise tax, I guess, on certain things, but certainly no income tax. And I'd like to see the whole thing go away. What do we need taxes for anyway? All we're doing is paying back loans to an illegal and criminal Federal Reserve Corporation that has loaned money to the U.S. government, which we have to pay back. That's what taxes are used for, essentially, to pay back loans that the government has taken from the Federal Reserve. And, of course, the Federal Reserve Banking Corporation, a privately held corporation, which is in no way, shape, or form beholden to the U.S. government. You know, they're beholden to their shareholders, which is an interesting group of names. You might check that out, the shareholder. You know, who are the owners, who are the shareholders of the Federal Reserve Corporation? You won't find that on the New York Times front page. All these great journalists out there doing great work. Thanks a lot for sharing all the secrets with us, pals. Thanks a lot for letting us in on the scam. You know, and the Federal Reserve prints it right out of thin air. They don't print money. They just digitize it. All they do is with a keystroke. Here's $500 billion for your latest, greatest, stupid war. And now pay us back with interest. And you can get all that money to pay us back from your grossly incompetent and ignorant citizenry, of which you've hoodwinked for the last 100 years. All right. Here's to you all on tax day. I got my tax return back. I actually got money back from them. You know, that was nice. Give you a little bit of your own money back. Hello to everybody listening out there, by the way, this evening on KOPN, over the traditional airwaves or over the Internet, live or otherwise. Every Monday we broadcast this show from the perfectly adequate studios of KOPN in lovely downtown Columbia, Missouri. And we stream the show live as well on the web, kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button. You get a lovely 64K stream. And you can listen to this program and anything else on KOPN anywhere on the planet, as long as you've got a decent Internet connection. Thanks to everybody who makes it happen. We've got an amazing group of people here at KOPN that keeps this radio station on the air through the broadcast tower. You know, we got a 40,000-watt transmitter blasting the signal out to mid-Missouri and, you know, places beyond here in the Midwest. But we also have this Internet stream, which is a wonderful, you know, a wonderful tool and a great way to share information and ideas and music and everything else with people that aren't in our local neck of the woods. So thanks to everybody that makes that happen. Charlie's just amazing, the guy that does the website and keeps all the streaming stuff going real well here at KOPN, and Rich and Sam and Mike, all the great engineers that help out, David, you know, in the office, and everybody. I'm always appreciative and overwhelmed by the work that a bunch of volunteers do and keep this place up and running and have for 35 years now. So, speaking of the Internet, thank you to Larry Noriger, the web wizard. A big thank you to my friend Larry. We are working on some changes on the website. I'm really not happy with the website the way it is. We made a change just a couple months ago, and it's a PHP module-type front page there. And I'm sort of, you know, I sort of like the HTML, actually. And I just like the look of it better, and I love the green, and I love my butterfly and all that stuff. So we're going to try to come up with a way to incorporate some old stuff and some new stuff. I know there are many things on the website that are lacking, and I'm trying to remedy that. But hopefully this summer, between Larry and I, we will come up with a new and improved version of the website. In the meantime, it suffices, and it's just one of these evolutionary things. You know, the thing grows and changes and then changes back and morphs into something else. And anyway, Larry and I talked about it, and we're both sort of on the same page and want to do something different. So we'll do that over the next few months. And in the meanwhile, you know, take it for what it's worth. There are plenty of things to take a look at there and to listen to. If you go to the archives page, you'll have a long list of programs that have been broadcast for the last 3 or 4 years here on KOPN. Lots of interesting guests and friends who've been on the program with me over those years. You know, there's news and some interesting information, music, poetry, all kinds of different things out there. The forum is actually a very interesting place to hang out. Lots of stories and topics and wild ideas being shared and debated and discussed back and forth between all kinds of different folks. And you can link to all these places right from the main page on my website at MikeHagan.com. By the way, if you're an artist of any variety, please feel free to get in touch with me and share what you got. And we'll take a look at it, and if it makes any sense whatsoever to share it with other people, at least in my opinion, and I mean, somebody's got to make a decision, right? I'd be glad to do that. You know, we've got a lot of different types of artists that participate in the forum. There's a poetry section over there as well, and I surely encourage all of you to post your art, you know, and share it with us, share it with other people. And I love hearing from you, so please be not afraid, right? And send that stuff to me, and if nothing else, I'll give you my own opinion of what I think, you know? Speaking of art, I want to say hello to my new friend Kim, who is an artist and a very creative young woman, who is going to send me a piece of her art, which is really cool, and I appreciate it. So thank you, and to all of the other folks who have done the same thing in the past, I sure appreciate it, and all that stuff goes remembered, all right? Okay, on the web, MikeHagan.com, share your thoughts, okay? The forum is always busy, as I mentioned. There's a live chat room that is up and active right now, as it always is during the program. Hello to everybody over there. Drop in there a little bit later and say hi, and see what y'all got to say and to add to the conversation between myself and Mr. Kent Stedman coming up in just a bit here. And I thank Chaos, my friend, for keeping the chat thing up and running and doing a wonderful job, as he has now for a number of months, and just awesome. Played a joke on us last week. Chaos, like, puts a note up in the chat and says, sorry, y'all, this is going to be the last week for the chat. My domain expired, and I don't have any money, and I'm not going to renew, and so, you know, I'm sorry, did what I could while I could, but, you know, this is the end of the chat. And we were all like, oh, no way, bummer. And of course, it was an April Fool's joke that was brilliant, totally pulled the wool over, well, at least me. I don't know who else. But anyway, good one, Mr. Chaos. And I'm glad it was just a joke, because I sure appreciate the chat. And it's really cool that that y'all can sit in there and talk amongst yourselves and participate in the program at the same time. And it's just really, really neat. So thanks again to all of you for making it happen and for being a part of this whole Radio Orbit project. It's a great privilege to be able to share it with you. All right, my email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio@AOL.com. Send email to me. I'd love to hear from you. Same thing goes for the guests and musicians that are on the program. My friend Kent Stedman, who will be on in just a bit here, he loves to hear from you. Trust me. The key is to put something in the subject line with him that is outstanding, and by that I mean that it stands out, because he gets so much mail that things get lost in the mix sometimes. Same thing happens with me sometimes. I lose things, and things that I intend to respond to, or that I don't do it very often, but I know I do it once in a while, and when I do it, I always feel guilty and bad, because you have no way to contact the person that you know, that you lost, and they're sitting there thinking, hey, what a jerk, you know, and wrote him a letter and didn't respond to me or something like that. I swear to God, if that happens, you know, it's just an accident. Do my best to respond to everybody, you know, even if it's short and sweet. So Kent is the same way, but magnitudes probably greater in volume of email goes to Kent than does to me. So I can't imagine what it's like to have to be sifting through his stuff. because a lot of it is you know, you get spam and who knows what else you get in there. So, especially a guy like him. All right, so send something to him. Send something to me, and I'll do my best to check it out and get you a note back, okay? The phone number here in the radio station, if, you know, and I'm sure Kent doesn't mind taking phone calls, so I always say it lately. I've been trying to take more phone calls. I've been getting some email with listeners that are saying, hey, Mike, you should take more phone calls and talk to the listeners, you know, and just, you know, rap with some of the people listening to the show, and I'd be glad to. Oftentimes with guests, I don't do it, but that's usually a function of the guest. I always make the offer up front. So, you know, if you want to take calls, let me know, and we'll set it up that way. And oftentimes, more often than not, frankly, guests, at least on this program, prefer to just to not take phone calls. So, anyway. When they do want to, I'd love to, and I'd be glad to do that more often, you know, when it's just me and you, and we don't do that very often because usually we've got a guest lined up. But at any rate, tonight we'll be taking calls during the program at some time. I'm not sure exactly when, but we'll just let you know. That number will be 573-443-8255, 573-443-TALK, all right? You can give me and Kent to call and get in on the conversation a little bit later on, okay? Once again, Kent Stedman from CyberspaceOrbit.com will be with me in just probably about 15 minutes or so. And he's amazing, and his website's really cool, too. So take a look over there and sit back and grab a beer or a cup of coffee or a cigarette or a cigar or a twist of bomb. I don't care what you do. And kick back and enjoy the program with me, okay? All right. I will tell you a little bit about some upcoming guests. And then, yeah, let's do that. We'll do upcoming guests, and then I'll take a break, get Kent on the phone, and we'll come back and continue the program with him, okay? All right, tonight, as I mentioned, Kent Stedman, CyberspaceOrbit.com. Should be a very interesting time with Kent tonight. He hasn't been on the air with me in quite some time, and we both had a very sort of rough winter, and we're going to talk about what it's like coming out on the other side, I guess, of a cold, dark winter. And whatever else comes along with that. With Kent, you never know, okay? Next week, the 21st of April, Sterling Allen. We'll talk with Sterling Allen about alternative energy and many different modes of it. He's sort of a catch-all and a clearinghouse for this type of information. He is involved in something called the New Energy Congress, I think, or Alternative Energy Congress, something like that. But anyway, he really is sort of in the thick of the whole alternative energy, phenomenon, and knows a whole lot about solar and wind and water and some more esoteric technologies as well that we'll be talking about, things that may be a little more out of the box than what we're normally hearing from the usual suspects. So, Sterling Allen next week. We will also have, during the first hour of the program next week, we'll have a special guest with me, Bill Murphy, who is the chairman of GATA, the Gold Antitrust Association. Bill Murphy is an amazing guy, and we're going to talk a little bit about high finance and economics and precious metals, market manipulations in the stock markets and the equity markets and the precious metals markets for sure. Anyway, the guy who began La Metropole Cafe many, many years ago and along with some cohorts over there at GATA is just, leading the charge with regard to currency and the challenge of getting a currency that's actually worth something back in place in the United States economy. So anyway, Bill Murphy, the leader, the CEO of GATA, the Gold Antitrust Association, will be with me for about 45 minutes or so probably during the first hour of the program next week, and then Sterling Allen talking about alternative energy. for the rest of the program next week. On the 28th, Dr. Neil, I had been confused about this last week. Well, apparently I still am. But at any rate, next week, Dr. Rustam Roy. Dr. Rustam Roy is a professor emeritus in material science at Penn State University. He is a brilliant, brilliant physicist and just world renowned. All around the planet, Rustam Roy is known in many different fields. And I am absolutely thrilled and privileged to be able to have an interview with Rustam Roy for you on the 28th of April. What has Rustam Roy done? Well, recently, as recent as last night, those of you who watched the television, apparently on 60 Minutes last night, the CBS news program, there was a presentation done that featured a man whose name is John Kanzius. And John Kanzius is a man from Florida, not a doctor, not a professor, really, when it comes to academia, no one of note, but he's still a very intelligent man with some ideas of his own, and he began to tinker with some RF devices and a whole bunch of scientific equipment a number of years ago, and his goal was to come up with a new way to treat and cure cancer. And he actually has done this, apparently. And they featured John Kanzius on 60 Minutes last night. Just a remarkable program. I saw just some clips on the web today. But I encourage all of you, especially if you have loved ones or family members or friends or anyone that you know that is afflicted with cancer of any sort at this point. This is information that is very important that they hear and potentially very, very beneficial for their future and for their quality of life. So, at any rate, John Kanzius, this guy from Florida, about a year ago, he sort of made a big splash on YouTube because there was a local news program produced there in Florida, the local affiliate of one of the networks, I forget which one, maybe Fox, actually, believe it or not. And it was a short 3 or 4 minute piece on this guy Kanzius, but it was about something completely different. And this is where Rustam Roy comes in. The cancer work that Kanzius has been doing involves using radio frequency, RF waves. Well, while he was experimenting, he ran a particular frequency of RF through a medium that contained salt water, just standard salt water, and the concentrations can vary, and we'll talk a little bit more about this with Rustam Roy. But it turns out that the gas that was being given off, there was a reaction that was taking place when the RF was passing through the water, and what eventually it turns out is happening is that the water molecules, the hydrogen and oxygen, are being excited to the point where the bonds are broken between the atoms, and they're released into the as a gas, and then the hydrogen and oxygen sort of recombine as a gas and can be used as a fuel in a different configuration. The oxygen acts as a catalyst, and hydrogen as a fuel. Anyway, the thing burns at 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit, and it is essentially burning salt water. And this is was just a side note to Mr. Kanzius, who was pursuing the experimentation and the research with the goal of curing cancer, and it appears that he has actually done that. The show last night on 60 Minutes was about cancer and about the amazing potential of this invention and this technology that John Kanzius has sort of revived. It's very reminiscent of Royal Raymond Rife and the work that he was doing almost 100 years ago. But we won't go there for now. We'll look at what's happening right now, and I'm very encouraged by it. And as a side note, the thing Mr. Kansas's research perhaps discovered an amazingly clean and abundant new energy source, that being salt water. You know, there's a lot of salt water on this planet, you know, 70% of it. And how many miles deep, okay? So, anyway, Dr. Rustam Roy, who will be on the program on the 28th of April, is the scientist who's responsible for writing the scientific paper that confirmed and verified Kansas's work on the hydrogen-oxygen separation in salt water when an RF wave is applied to it. And again, Rustam Roy is a world-renowned material scientist with all kinds of accomplishments to his credit, and his career has been an astonishing one. Go and do a little search on Rustam Roy, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. He's currently, you know, teaching at Penn State, and he teaches abroad as well. But he's a remarkable fellow, and he wrote a scientific, you know, peer-reviewed paper that was released in March, just a couple weeks ago, in the Materials Research Innovations Journal, again, a highly regarded scientific peer-reviewed journal. And, of course, Rustam Roy, once again, just a top shelf in the field of material science and a number of other things. But anyway, so Rustam Roy going to be with us, and we're going to talk about burning salt water and new energy possibilities that are on the very, very near horizon. I mean, this is stuff that can be, you know, can be implemented very, very quickly. We're not talking about, you know, 10 years, 15 years. All these people talk about, oh, in 2020, we expect to have carbon. 2020? What are you talking about? It might as well be 20 million in 20, right? I mean, look at what's happening now month by month. I mean, my God, the world is changing so fast, if you can even keep track of it, it's a credit to you. And you got people talking about 10, 15, 20, 50 years in the future. What a clueless bunch of crap. No matter what they're talking about, it doesn't matter what the topic is. It doesn't matter what the topic, any subject, pick anyone on the planet. It doesn't matter what you want to talk about. If you think you have any clue about what it's going to be like in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you are just lost. And I'm sorry, but it's just the way it is. It makes people feel comfortable and safe to think they have an idea of where things are going. Nobody has any idea where things are going. People can't tell you what's going to happen 5 days from now, much less 5 years. And my intuition is that energy, healthcare, economics, all these things are going to change. And they're going to change quick. And they're going to change in a way that many people perhaps aren't expecting. And, well, you know, that's the way change is, you know. We were listening to a radio theater program earlier talking about a gambler, right, about gambling. Well, that's sort of the way the world is, you know. Where do you place your chips? You know, if you think that your chips are best placed, you know, with the onward march of consumer capitalism and industrial genocide, if you think that's where it's at and that's where it's going to be, well, then, you know, keep all your money in your 401k, keep climbing the corporate ladder, you know, whatever. Do that. If you think that your money is best placed elsewhere, well, then place it elsewhere. And that's what the whole thing is, you know. It's a sort of a matter of where you place your bets. And, you know, I'm willing to talk about where I'm going to put mine. And it is in the new, not the old, I'll tell you that much. And Dr. Rustam Roy is a guy that is pushing this energy thing very, 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 very strongly, and he's not somebody who's going to be silenced. And the fact that this cancer thing was on 60 Minutes last night is a very big deal, in my opinion. Now, the other thing that Rustam Roy is involved in is silver. The way that I even came across Rustam Roy is because, you know, I'm interested in this nano particular silver, and the company that I'm most interested in is called American Biotech Labs, and Dr. Roy is one of the material scientists who wrote a peer-reviewed paper on nano silver that was that was picked up and by AVL. So anyway, that's how I came across him. And he's also written some scientific papers and material on structured water. And anyway, the guy is just brilliant. And we're going to talk about all these things with Rustam Roy in 2 weeks. In fact, I'll probably do a recorded interview with him. He's on the East Coast, and midnight to 3 a.m. just will not work. So we're going to record the interview a couple, 3 days, 4 days beforehand, and I'll get it edited and air it for you on the 28th of April, okay? And very excited about it. And I think that all of you who have an interest in, moving beyond the oil paradigm, moving beyond the pharmaceutical death care paradigm, you should be interested in the work that Rustam Roy is doing. And I think, like I say, this is not stuff that's far away. And last night was a very, very good indication that that we're sort of making some progress, because when this stuff comes out on 60 Minutes, there's a whole lot of people that see that, and people that normally don't see that type of stuff. So anyway, we'll have to watch it and keep pushing, okay? All right, Harvey Arden, a Lakota elder, will be on the program sometime in the next couple months. Dr. Neil Goldsmith on the 12th of May. Richard Allen Miller here in the studio with me, live in Columbia, May 5th. We'll have a big party down at the Blue Fugue that Monday night, too. You should all try to come down and hang out with us. I'll tell you more about that as we get closer, but I think we'll make that a real fun time. And, well, lots more in the wings. So let's take a break here. We'll come back and talk about whatever we decide to with Mr. Kent Steadman, because I'm going to get him on the horn right now, okay? In the meanwhile, I will play another song from Kichwa Mashis. This one is called Laki Laki. Back in just a few minutes. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. Quechua Machis. You're listening to it. You're on Radio Orbit, KOPN, Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's about 12 minutes or so before the midnight hour. Still the 14th of April, 2008. Get your taxes done. Or don't do them at all, or I don't know. That'll probably cause you some trouble. I tried that once. I tried to, one time I sent my tax returns in, but I put zeros on everything. And this was some advice that I had gotten from someone. I forget where along the way. This was years ago, but I've never been into paying taxes, and I've always realized that it was a con. But there's a difference between realizing it's a con and getting away with it, getting away with not paying. Anyway, so I tried to not pay. Well, I ended up paying. They were going to make things a little bit more difficult than I was willing to put up with, so I decided to pay. So I've been paying ever since, but I try to pay them as little as I possibly can. I actually got some money back the other day. But the whole thing's a racket. It's just, the problem is getting it straightened out, getting it removed, essentially. The IRS should be completely... I mean, Ron Paul is the only guy that's talking any kind of sense with regard to economics. And, of course, he's basically blackballed, in the mainstream media. Of course, it's because he is the only guy talking sense, and they know how dangerous it is if people actually get a load of what the guy is saying. Because it rings true with so many people. But at any rate, with regard to economics and currency and central banks and all this sort of stuff, and taxes, my God. Well, Ron Paul's the only guy who even understands that there is a con. Maybe the other people understand that it's a racket, but they're part of it. They're digging it. He's saying, no, and this is not the way it's supposed to be done. At any rate, we're going to shift gears here. And say hello to Kent Stedman from cyberspaceorbit.com. Check out his website for sure sometime while we're on the air with him. But for those who are regular listeners to the program, Kent has been on the air here on Radio Orbit many, many times over the course of 4 years or so. In fact, he was the first guest that ever appeared on this program. And he'll probably be the last. So... without any more delay, hopefully the last one won't be tonight, but if it is, we'll go out with a bang. Me and Kent Stedman, my best friend in the world. Hello, my friend.
The last, huh?
I don't know. I'm thinking. Never know. I'm starting to feel another one of these colds coming on. Last time I had a cold coming on, it turned out to be pneumonia.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, last time I had something come on, it killed me. So I'm dead now. You can ask me any question. I'm dead. I've got my dead T-shirt on.
The grateful one?
Yeah. Well, ungrateful. The ungrateful undead, I guess it's me.
Well, I'll tell you that this winter, I thought you were going to die. I was really worried, frankly, about you, and maybe you did, and now you're back with us. But at any rate, it's good to be talking to you, whether you're dead or alive. And I can't imagine you answering any better dead than you normally do alive, anyway. So.
Well, I've noticed throughout my weird life that I keep dying. I mean, it started with a motorcycle over a cliff in Mariposa County, California, and various other interesting excursions. But I keep ending up back in weird places like Fresno or Seattle or St. Augustine or worse yet, Utah. So I'm back in the outback. I'm back. But the New Agers call it passages. So recently I've taken a real old geezer passage. See, I'm Mike's old geezer, the old geezer guy in the cave in the middle of the metropolis here in Seattle. But now I really qualify because you know what a wizard is?
No, what?
It's an advanced wreck. You got to bottom out, man, or you ain't no cotton-picking wizard.
Mm-hmm.
So now I qualify better because... I went to the hospital and everything. I haven't done that ever, hardly.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out it was a good thing you did, too, even though it was sort of against my better judgment. I can't stand when people go into a hospital. I figure that's one of the worst places you can be if you're sick. But
no kidding. You know, I don't go to doctors. I haven't been to a doctor in 35 years.
Right. Well, they took care of you. They did something right, because I know you're feeling better now.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I got a deal called congestive heart failure, which nobody knows what the hell it is, including my cardiologist. My cardiologist looks like Master Yoda. That's why I decided, well, I'll go with this guy. And I asked him, well, what is CHF, congestive heart failure? He said, hell, I don't know.
Thanks a lot, Yoda.
Well, what you do is you quit breathing. I started by not breathing anymore. Not being able to breathe, just gasping breath to where the only way I could breathe was to humbly kneel, put a cushion on the floor, kneel on it, lean forward over a couch, and bow my head. And in that position, I could breathe.
Oh, my God.
So now I know what the prayer position is really all about. And that's what you do when you can't breathe.
Yeah, you get down on your knees.
I'm not kidding. That's the way I had to sleep.
Well, I know. That, I mean, you told you the stories that you were telling me in the middle of the winter, I was like, God damn, is he going to be all right? You know, because I know you were having such a difficult time breathing. You were saying, my God, you can't sleep because you'll just stop breathing.
Yeah, so I tried various new agey remedies, you know, for everything from oil of oregano to ginseng to some green stuff. A friend sent me chlorophyll. Tried all that, but I still couldn't breathe very good. In fact, I couldn't breathe for about a month before I decided that's it. I'm not getting anywhere. See, I'm used to my body like everybody else out there, perhaps. Your body is tough, and it repairs itself. I mean, I went over a cliff in my motorcycle, repaired itself.
Right.
But I couldn't do anything anymore. And I realized, well, looks like I've had it. I'm backed into a corner. American Medical Association, here I come.
Oh, man. Yeah, talk about a frightening prospect. My God.
No kidding.
Well, then what? So keep telling the story. I mean,
So They put me in the hospital and essentially drained all the extra fluid out of my body because my lower extremities were swollen up like a balloon, all this swamp water I had in my system. That's what happens when your heart quits pumping good. And, you know, the ungrateful undead, my heart at the moment is only pumping at about 20%.
Jeez.
So they tell me. But I've never felt better. If this is dead, I highly recommend it. Because I lost about 40 pounds.
Wow, that's a big chunk of weight.
All goop water, so I'm skinny now. And highly attractive.
Yeah, I got a fancy picture of you right up there on the front page.
Yeah, that was the old Ken. I'm not him anymore.
Wow.
Because now I'm dead.
That's right, dead and good looking.
And I feel different. I feel like consciousness shifted to the right about 10 degrees. I don't feel like the same person. It's very odd. I'm dumber because not breathing for so damn long, I think, means dumber, which is good. I recommend that, too.
You got to get uneducated.
So, you know, being dumb, I just got my income tax filed. Which always makes me feel evil. So now I'm evil like all my next-door neighbors because I filed my income tax and I'm participating in the scourge of Earth. What else? Ask me a question. I'm dead.
All right. Here's a question.
How's that for a campfire tale?
It's pretty good. We're going to have a good talk tonight for sure. And we'll talk about death and dying, and we talked about this a little bit before, actually, and it's kind of fun because most people don't like to talk about it. It's sort of like taboo, but
if you're going to be a conspiracy theorist, it's the only remaining subject, and it's the ultimate subject. The ultimate sleuth is death and dying. Far beyond alternate energy and the various brainless condition of George Bush, you know. It's also a way of getting even with elite brats and so on, because we're all in the same boat on that, aren't we?
Yeah, at least so far.
We all end up in the same boneyard, so ha-ha, Baron von Rothschild, see you there. And it is the ultimate question. It's the ultimate final question, and yet, of course, culturally we avoid it. Okay, back to your question.
Well, I was going to ask you if there's music there when you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah? Is it any good?
Well, it's like 2001 Space Odyssey. Remember that music?
I sure do.
I remember the part where there were all these kind of choirs of voices singing from the heavenly spheres. That's the type of music. And for a musician, by the way, you do hear in your various spectrum, the various bands in the spectrum of life and death, you do hear occasionally this profound music. And for me, it's beyond anything I've ever been able to play.
Of course.
In fact, it's beyond anything I've ever heard, whether it's Bob Dylan or Mozart. And powerful stuff. It shakes you. But, you know, you approach that sometimes in the spectrum of life, death, more in the life. And you, I've died every night, gone to my dream world. And sometimes I'll hear this incredible music.
Mm-hmm.
And I wake up weeping. It's so profound. It's beyond anything I've ever heard, you know. And I don't know how to translate it. One time, myself and Don Beadle and Harry and all those, the Sweet Smell crowd that Mike has met, we were picking tunes in a household where we were playing a gig for a bunch of attorneys in a house party in Fresno. And somewhere in the middle of our ego battle, which is what happens when a bunch of musicians get together, you sort of bounce off each other. Well, look at this. Well, look at this.
Yeah, watch this.
Look at
this.
And finally, we melded somehow, like mind melded, and went into a unique threshold, a creative zone where, well, what happened is the next thing we knew is the sun was coming up, and all the attorneys were still there listening. And we were going, what the heck happened?
And you guys had played all night.
We played all night. And we were, like, the next day, we were calling one another, saying, what happened? What happened? So it was a creative threshold that we'd never experienced before. And in a sense, I've never experienced again since.
Let me do a top-of-the-hour ID here. You're listening to KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. This is Radio Orbit. And my guest is Kent Stedman from CyberspaceOrbit.com. You make me think about, there's this old tale about Beethoven, and I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but it's a great story, and the notion was that he had made a comment at one time and said that if you could hear the music that I hear in my mind, if you could hear the music that I hear inside of me, you wouldn't waste the time on the stuff that I've written here.
Yeah, and Mozart, Wolfgang. I mean, essentially, people like Beethoven and Mozart and Bach, they were essentially scribes, is what they were. They were able to write down on a piece of paper that music that was coming from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And Mozart did so in a sense that he didn't have to ever make any corrections. He just wrote it down the first time and never crossed anything out. By the time he's done, there's a whole symphony.
It's absolutely remarkable, yeah.
And he was doing that type of thing at the age of 3. Yes.
I mean, really, I mean, that's especially for anyone out there who has children. I mean, my son's 4 and a half, and I consider him a reasonably bright 4 and a half year old, and he can barely write Alex, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm dumber now, so I can barely write at all.
Yeah, and when you do, you write words that don't even have any meaning. You write things like gorp and drog and all kinds of things. I don't know what the hell you're talking about anymore.
Well, and another thing, I can't remember what I did an hour ago.
Really?
So running this website is really a trip. To say, the guy wrote me an email. Well, what happened to such and such this NRO satellite that they blasted out of orbit?
Yeah.
And I couldn't even remember that. What are you talking about? I had to go back to my website and re-examine all the intense research, which was really intense, that I did it for about a month on that.
Oh, I know. You were pretty dogged about that one for a while.
Now I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what.
They blasted that out of the sky, but I don't know. I'm still getting reports that people are seeing it.
And it's weird how they sort of went silent about it after the day that they had their sort of fancy launch or whatever and said they hit it, and then no more news after that for the most part.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a little break here.
Let's do.
Yeah, and we'll play a piece of music and then come back, and we'll talk about, I'm going to get your website up, and we'll take a peek around, see what's happening in orbit there, okay?
Well, I could give you an IRS tale of your, if you want me to.
Yeah, we'll do that, too. We'll do it.
It's really far out, man. It involves an old Gabby Hayes, me and Gabby Hayes and the IRS.
All right, we'll do it when we come back, okay?
Okay.
All right, everybody. Mike Hagan, Ken Steadman, Gabby Hayes, and the IRS in just a few minutes. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And this is a song by Kichwa Mashis, and the song is called Linda y Bella. It's Mike, and be back in just a minute with Ken. Quechua Machis. That one's called Linda y Bella. Ecuadorian music from the high Andes. And on the web at Incasite, I-N-C-A-S-I-T-E, Incasite.com. My friend Kent Stedman is with me on the air here from CyberspaceOrbit.com. Hey, Kent, remember those guys? We saw them at the at Folklife in Seattle. That's where I got that music.
Oh, they're really interesting.
Do you remember those guys? They were in that little square?
Oh, yeah. Every year they're there. The only thing that's missing is Snow White. Because these guys are the Seven Elves from Peru. And they're these Inca gentlemen, great musicians, that play this awesome music and sort of dance around in a circle.
Yeah, that was incredible. They play these huge flutes and string instruments. And anyway, it sounds great. I love listening to it. I had a couple comments already in email saying, hey, you like the tunes. It's so.
Well, they used to dance around in a circle. Now they got amps.
Yeah, now they're amplified.
And so they sit up there like in a row, which is not as cool as dancing around in a circle, which is a traditional circle dance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Much like any of the Native Americans do, the Lakota.
Yeah, there's a lot of circle dancing going on, that's for sure, in those cultures.
But they play the pan flute and various odd-shaped guitars, little guitars. And they're awesome. They're great. I mean, it's hypnotizing.
Yeah,
hypnotic.
I know.
Hypnotic.
Yeah,
listen to that music.
It really is.
What's more ethereal than a pan flute? My gosh.
Well, I don't know. I'd like to see them again. Do they... Is Folklife, that's in May, right? Is that when they do that?
Right.
So coming up, just around the corner, I guess. I don't know, maybe I'll get out there. I don't know. The odds are slim, but you never know.
All right. I went last year, but I didn't stay long because it's so crowded. And I had my grandson with me, and he wanted to take off.
Oh, yeah, and he's only
so just
two
right
and a half years old.
Him.
Yeah. Well, we saw it during the good years, you know, 5-6 years ago when it wasn't so crowded and stuff. That was pretty cool, but a lot of those events sometimes get overblown and then they lose some of their charm because it's just, it's something just, I don't know, nothing lasts.
No, it's really good. It's the most wonderful folk experience ever. I mean, it's huge.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
There'll be 500,000 people there, 1,000,000 on the weekend. Carrie, my good friend Carrie Lung, and his wife Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie's the director of the whole thing right there.
Is she really still doing that? That's amazing.
Yeah, she's amazing. They got married, you know.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
Had a wonderful.
And Carrie's a wonderful musician himself. Plays mandolin and the what's that funky bigger mandolin thing that he plays? It's like a big.
Well,
mandolin.
It's called a. Mandola.
A mandola, yeah. Yeah, he's incredibly talented. And are they still, will he be performing? Are those guys still playing music?
Well, he's really hooked into it because he's married to the director.
Right.
And he's very key. Huh. He helps. He's, they work together on it, essentially.
Wow, that's so cool.
Which is cool because whether I'm performing or not, I'll get a pass and get the
right. And you got the inside track for sure. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll try to get out there for it. We'll see. That was just a thrill for me to sit around and play music with those guys and with you. I always loved that when I was able to come there for
yeah,
folk
life. I'm really wanting to come to Missouri.
Well, we'll do the solstice party again in June, like we always do on the 21st of June.
June
21st. It's a Saturday. Of course, you're welcome to come, you know, for the weekend and whatever. But and that goes out to all my listeners. This is a good time to mention it. Get your calendars marked because it's only about 2 months away. The annual summer solstice party out there at the Shire in Roachport. We'll be doing it up again this year, and lots of musicians going to be there. Lots and lots of friends and family from out of town and from around these parts. And with any good luck, we'll have Kent and Wendy Stedman from Seattle visiting, I hope. I know you got a lot of things going on, but if you're feeling well and you don't have a conflict in your schedule, I'll do whatever I can do to get you here. So.
Oh, I really want to be there. If I'm not there, I'll be there anyway.
Yeah, because I keep forgetting you're dead, and now you can just go anywhere. So.
last year, the conversation is just incredible because you've got people like Mike and Sheliak and Johnny.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You know, people that can really soul talk deeply, you know, with intelligence. But I found out that later, during my experience there, I sort of disappeared behind the music. Because that's incredible, too.
Yeah.
You know, that part of Missouri, I'm amazed at the talent there and the poetic talent there. The poets that pick tunes.
Oh, there's some wonderful musicians around here, and I'm sort of my aspiration, and it already sort of happens this way anyway, but I really like the idea of this little thing that we do out at our place every year to become, well, you know, just sort of like a makeshift little festival. And you know, I like to have musicians there, but we don't really, if we wanted to, we could schedule bands and have, you know, live shows. But there are a lot of people that say, hey, I'd love to come and play at your solstice party. But I say, well, I don't want you to come and play formally. I want you to come and hang out and bring your stuff, you know, and we'll all just sit around and jam and see what happens. And my gosh, when you do that, it just becomes it's just a great experience, you know.
The best, by far the best music I have ever heard anywhere was at a jam, at a house party. Better than anything I've heard coming from the concert stage or the nightclub. By far the best music I've ever heard, and that includes the crowd I kind of hung around with, a sort of old-timey bluegrass gang.
Right.
The Irish music, too. The best I've ever heard was out in somebody's backyard. I mean, somebody should have been there recording it, which was not always the case, because that was the best music.
Wow.
Ever. So, yeah, music is a birthright in a way, and we should all participate in it at some level, you know?
Yeah.
I pick guitar, and I've got one hand. So there you go.
Yeah.
If you go to a house party where they're playing music, and you've got two hands and not picking music,
or beating on a drum or doing something, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's when it happens. You get a circle of people and let them all chime in, and you never know what happens. Sometimes it's absolutely amazing. I've had some of the most amazing musical experiences as well in essentially private situations with either only one or maybe very, very few people. I've had experiences with Johnny. You know, you mentioned Johnny, right?
Incredible music.
Holy shit.
And he plays everything wrong, upside down.
Yeah, never played a conventional guitar chord in his life. Couldn't tell you how to make an A minor seventh, you know. But
neither can I.
But yeah, neither could I, frankly. But I mean, the guy's just remarkable. But years ago, when he was not quite as good a guitarist as he is today, now he's like, you know, Joe Satriani type guitarist. Even though he doesn't play that type of music, but he's that skilled, he's amazing. But back in the day when he wasn't such a great guitarist, he and I would just sit around on the floor of his apartment, and he's always been a brilliant songwriter, though, and just this tremendously poetic lyricist. I mean, if you read the words that the guy writes, it's just amazing, and he's prolific. He can write nonstop, and stuff just pours out of him, you know, Anyway, I remember a number of occasions just sitting there, probably 2 or 3 in the morning after the bar closed, who knows, you know what I mean, just sitting there on his floor, though, and me sort of tapping on this funky African percussion thing that he had, and him playing his guitar and singing these songs. And I remember, I mean, to this day it's so clear, and I think, my God, that's some of the most amazing music I ever heard.
Yeah, I knew that he had the mojo, because I was sitting with Johnny on Mike's porch on Friday afternoon, before things really started kicking up.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his guitar, and he was playing on it on your deck.
Yeah.
And this cuckoo bird comes racing out in a beeline from outer space and slams against Mike's bay window.
Right.
It overlooks the pond.
Right, big bird smashed into the window, yeah.
And he goes clunk right by Johnny with his tongue hanging out. We thought, oh, my God, there's one dead bird.
Yeah, I thought the bird was dead, yeah.
But we did this little sort of ceremony for the bird, and the bird opened his eyes, hopped up, climbed up on Johnny's back, sat on his head.
Yeah, and sat on his head.
And so there was the bird, the dead bird, sitting on Johnny's head, prancing around. Johnny had huge eyes, big eyes. Oh, my God.
That was a pretty big bird.
Dancing on my head. And then he flew off with a thank you, guys.
Yeah, that's right.
And I thought, this is going to be good.
Yeah, sure enough, it was. And, well, but anyway, so you're right. I think that you can catch things, you know, in a non-planned environment sometimes, and it just comes out magical, and there's nothing you can do to know about it or plan it. You just got to sort of be there to experience it, and then it just goes away because it's not saved, you know.
Well, Mike's place is an amazing place. You know, I used to have a spread myself, a farm out in the country, which in the 70s became like an artist colony or, well, hell, hippie commune. That's what it became. And it was 8 acres, similar to what you got now, 12, 13.
Yeah, I got my 13 now, yeah.
How big is your pond? He's got an 8 acre. He's got his own place with his own pond.
Yeah, the water. I think there's about an acre and a half of water. Although these years probably closer to 2 acres with all the freaking rain we've had. But
teeming with luck.
Yeah, lots and lots of critters running around and swimming around. And I was looking at the tadpoles and the frogs this weekend, and they're all, you know, they got 2 eyes, not 3, which is good. You know, four limbs, and they're all looking pretty healthy. So I tend to look at the amphibious wildlife, you know, to get a feel for the level of, you know, contamination in the land and in the water and stuff. But it's a pretty healthy, pretty stable little environment we've got, at least in that little area that we've got there, you know. And I do my best to try to keep it that way.
Which reminds me of the IRS.
Ah, yeah, that's right. We got the Gabby Hayes IRS story. Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, I was sitting out at the farm, and see, living out there, one of the lost boys in Peter Panville out there was this, was this Gabby Hayes sort of guy.
Uh-huh.
And I found him because the county of Fresno had had deprived me of my driver's license. For various unholy reasons, and so I went looking for a. I went into town and went to the Olympic Tavern to find me a driver.
Yeah,
and a guy that looked like Gabby Hayes volunteered to come out, live at the farm, and be my driver. And he was incredible. He was the second worst drunk in Fresno at the time.
Who was first? You were number one.
Those were my drinking days. And which I don't do anymore, but I have to say that for my own feeling of something. Well, anyway, we were sitting out there with about on the weekends. Our hippie commune would increase exponentially to 50 to 100 people,
mm-hmm.
And we were sitting out there, and we're in the living room on a. A late spring night, kind of chilly outside, and suddenly the door comes flying open, and this big-looking bozo, biker-looking dude comes tearing in the living room and says, Gabby! Well, his name wasn't Gabby, but that's a good coin name. And he said, it's you! He says, I've been looking for you for 20 years. And so here's an old friend of Gabby Hayes, And I noticed that Gabby sort of shrinks in the corner going, oh, my God. And things are going to get very interesting. And they did. So they spent the whole night talking about their days in their younger days, which included various shenanigans, included the Navy for a while. And then it included one night going out to the county park somewhere in America and putting a bowling ball down throat of a Confederate cannon out in the park and putting some black powder in the back, igniting it and shooting a bowling ball into town, which went through an office window and then bounced down the stairs and the 12th floor down. Things like that. So that was the beginning of the tale. Well, it turns out that this big bozo biker-looking dude worked for the IRS. That was his job. He was had an important supervisor job out at the IRS.
Uh-huh.
Well, at that time, I don't know why, but I was getting pretty regularly a lot of mail from the IRS. And they'd say, "Who did your tax return?" I'd write back and say, "Jack Daniels did my tax return." And then it'd go from there, but I was getting a lot of hassle from the IRS, anything I did. And so I said, hey, biker dude, I said, can you help me with this thing? Who's doing this out there? Turns out I was teaching college during the day, and I very often during my lectures, I'd diss the IRS. Not good in front of 200 people, which included IRS people.
All right.
So he said, he sat and thought, and he says, I'll tell you what, he says, now that we're pals, he says, and he specified a date and said, I want you to show up with a keg of beer on the edge of Pine Flat Lake next Saturday. Okay. So me and Gabby and a keg of beer, he was driving in the back of my pickup truck, headed out to Pine Flat Lake, and here comes biker dude with his supervisor. And his dog.
Uh-huh.
Well, his supervisor was sort of like my caseworker. He announced himself as a federal general. General, and he was a big shot in Fresno IRS. And he was the one that was essentially sending me a lot of mail. He was my caseworker, like having a probation officer, in a sense.
Yeah, so he's the guy that's all over you.
So things worked out really good. He and his dog, we all partied. He drank a lot of beer, and then he fell down the slope in the Pine Flat Lake. And I ran down there really quick and pulled him out and saved his life. Hmm. And then I noticed, from there on, over the next few years, that I was no longer being counseled by the IRS. So that's my IRS
story. Oh, man, that's you got to save an agent's life, I guess. That's what it comes
down
to.
One of many from my ARG acre.
Oh, man.
I was a college professor, see, believe it or not.
Oh, I believe it.
But I had, 20 miles out in the country, I had a place like Mike's. Mm-hmm. Which was a farm. And there on that farm, many adventures were to be had because a lot of people moved out there that were very interesting people.
Well, I'll tell you, the place out in Roachport where we live is sort of, it's not quite the level that you guys had back then, but it does attract people for sure, and there's some interesting characters that come and go from there for sure these days. So now's the first invite. Anybody listening to this program, if you're within the sound of my voice, you are welcome to come to my home and enjoy the company of myself and hopefully people like Kent Stedman, and I'm sure John will be there again. I don't know who else, but certainly a number of guests from the program that are friends that just like to come and hang out, but also a whole cast of characters from around this area and elsewhere, and you're all welcome to come there and join us, as long as you're a friendly type, if you know what I mean. So, anyway, I'll tell you.
John is amazing. He'll be there, as far as I know.
Oh, sure.
He's been writing me. He's had similar experiences with this congestive stuff.
Mm.
And well, anyway, John is amazing. He's an experimental physicist, a real deal.
Yeah, Los Alamos.
And from where is it? Los Alamos?
Yeah, he works at Los Alamos, and he is a remarkable person, recognized, you know, by his peers as such, you know, and I think he's getting ready to get out of Los Alamos, though. I think he's considering moving on, but I'm trying to get him to come here. There's a major nuclear physics program going on here. We actually have a research reactor here, one of the few research reactors in the country, you know, where they're a nuclear reactor that's actually operational, that's used not for power generation, but for scientific experimentation, right? We got one here. I mean, I'm about, I don't know, a half a mile from it right now. And anyway, there'd be certainly work for John here if he wanted to stick with that particular part of his background. But at any rate, yeah, he'll be here for sure in June. And I think John's coming for like a week because he did want to stick around and take a look around the area and maybe talk to some people. So anyway, yeah, Shelyak will be here, and who knows who else. I mean, I'm always amazed by who shows up. So I just put the invite out there and tell people to not be shy and come and join us, because it's going to be a good time this year for sure.
Doing my work online, I've gotten a lot of flack from people that call themselves scientists, you know, because I have a tendency to be the jack in the box and jump out and see what's beyond current theory. But meeting John, who's a real experimental physicist, not some engineer dude that thinks he builds bridges and works for the county and thinks he's a scientist. he's a real experimental physicist. And I come to realize after meeting John that he's a jack-in-the-box type, too.
He sure is.
That he throws no fence line around his perimeters. He's willing to go way out there.
Well, and this is what science is about. I mean, science is about, sure, you have to have evidence and you have to have your method, but it's not supposed to be dogmatic. In other words, old ideas, if they are shown to be false, need to be left alone and done and move on to new stuff. And, man, John is as open-minded a scientist as I've ever come across.
Well, real physicists, I'm beginning to realize that that's where they are. You know, they're out there.
Well, they see stuff. You know, they're essentially having psychedelic experiences, but, you know, just sort of brought on by different circumstances. I mean, the stories that John can tell about quantum mechanics and the workings of that world, I mean, you might as well have had 500 micrograms or something, you know.
Yeah, and plus he's mapping McKenna's
the time wave
research.
Holy
time wave research. It's incredible. Talking about wavelets within the time wave, you know. It's amazing.
And I really think that, I mean, just as a side note, and John does too, or he wouldn't waste his time on it. In other words, he's a very serious, when it comes to his work, he's very serious about it. And again, you know, an expert among experts. And he wouldn't still be fiddling with the time wave if he didn't think that there was something very interesting going on there. And, you know, he really is the inheritor of that work, because, you know, Terence did what he did, but John is really the only guy on the planet, I think, that understands intuitively the underlying mathematics that make up the time wave. And I think that he is, I think that that's important. I'm not sure exactly why yet, but I do think it's important. And I think he does too, because he wouldn't carry on the work if he didn't think that there was something there.
I just clicked on my website at www.cyberspaceorbit.com to see what I'm up to lately.
Oh, God. Yeah, speaking of physicists, yeah, look what's on the front page.
I'm on the front page. Well, pretty soon in July, June, July, August, maybe through October, they're going to fire up the LHC, the
Large Hadron Collider.
At CERN in France, Switzerland territory over there.
And for people who don't know what the Large Hadron Collider is, give them a quick description of what we're talking about.
Well, it's the biggest toy ever made, you know, and it's the most complex. I've got a picture that's worth 1,000 words at the top of my page. You ought to go check it out,
yeah,
because it shows the complex collider mechanism, you know, tunneling through this huge cavern, circular cavern in the countryside, and then they show you an aerial view of the collider, and you know, you're way up in the sky looking down at like flying at 12,000 feet looking down at a city in Switzerland, and around the whole city and beyond, spanning between Switzerland and border countries is this giant circular cyclotron.
Hmm.
It's immense, you know, and it's the biggest cyclotron collider ever built. And already, you know, they're discussing firing the damn thing up. And already people are filing suit saying, don't do that, damn it. You know, what you're going to do is destroy the planet, you know. Yeah. There's a potential of opening up a breach in the Einstein-Rosen bridge, you know, and bringing the force of several suns into Switzerland.
Just dropping it right out of nowhere into a city.
Opening a white hole. Now, this is language that a Russian astrophysicist told me when they were marching and protesting and trying to sue Fermilab's Tevatron a few years ago in 98, 99. The same concern was opening concerning a much smaller circular collider in Chicago. And physicists themselves were saying, don't do that, you know. But now we've got this thing that just dwarfs anything on the planet.
Right, this thing's monstrous.
But what they're really trying to do, as far as I can figure, is they're trying to define... See, we've got our physics called particle physics, our basic physics that we put up with now in the 20th century. It's a particle physics based on the fact that that they keep breaking everything down through the process of analysis and actually destroying matter and taking it apart again and trying to see what's at the basis of everything. And they hope that there's a particle at the basis of
God.
Particle physics.
Right.
There's no guarantee that there is. And in fact, a few years ago, there was quite an astounding article going across the web that they have found no Higgs boson particle. There is no particle at the basis of matter, you know. That you keep going down, breaking apart molecules, breaking apart atoms, and going down, 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 and looking in pursuit of this hot particle. And it may not be there at all. Which is not new, the idea that there may not be any basis, that there may be no thing at the basis of matter is not a new idea. That's what Lorentz taught his disciple Einstein, this Dutch physicist. He says there's no guarantee that there's a particle at the basis of matter. There is no Higgs. They call it the God particle.
Mm-hmm. What they're searching for.
So what's there? Something? Maybe not. Maybe there's nothing there.
And the thing is, who knows? In other words, I mean, this is where it gets me. It's that, you know, you have this gigantic atom smasher that, like you say, is miles and miles around. They perform their experiments or whatever, and then all it does is generate data. I mean, whatever happens, assuming that they don't open a white hole, right?
Hope not.
I mean, if they open a white hole, you know.
I don't know. I hope not. I mean, if you had your hand on the switch of a huge toy like this in Switzerland, what would you do? Would you turn flip it?
Yeah, I actually probably would at this point because I have enough faith that it won't work.
Uh-huh.
In other words, I have very little confidence in the mechanics of all this stuff, and I think that the whole business of, you know, determining the latest greatest particle is sort of a racket. It's sort of a con, because the only way that the particles are discovered are through the crunching of a whole bunch of data and a whole bunch of fishy formulas, you know, that nobody understands unless you're a member of this little priesthood, right? And if you're a member of the gang or whatever, well, then you say, okay, yeah, well, all of our fishy formulas have yielded this little bit of data, and it says that, yeah, there's a new particle now, and we're going to name it after whoever. I just don't buy it. I mean,
but if there's no particle, see, that means that our type of physics that we're you and I have experienced riding herd on the Western world is bogus.
Well, it just means that there's a limit. In other words, maybe the atom, it's not the atom. It's not the nucleus. Maybe the electron. Once you get past electrons, is where it starts getting weird for me. But
yeah, now they're talking about. Well, they have found strangelets. And by the way,
quarks and positrons. Pretty soon you got words that were coined by Gene Roddenberry being used. I just don't think that they're there. In other words, and if they are, well, what good is it doing anyone?
There's a whole area of physics. The physicists themselves, the quantum heads and the particle physics dudes and the time wave dudes, they all fighting each other. But basically, the religion of physics has tried to make it be that there is an ultimate particle. Well, they're going to find out. But there are probability physicists, too, that say, hey, we only have the... What's at the basis of matter is just probability.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you pick up a rock on the stream bed and look at it and hold it in your hand, all of it's imaginary. That the reason you're experiencing that is simply due to the probability, a very high probability that you will be experiencing that at that moment. And so row, row, row your boat. And life is full of dream. Life is but a dream. The poets have kind of always known that, to a certain extent. And what I'm discovering, people like John Chaliak, who's a real particle physicist, he meets where the poets go, too. He doesn't shy away from that territory. And who knows? I was sitting in a cafeteria with a bunch of hippies during the late 70s where I taught at Fresno City College, That week there was an Indian Awareness Week, Native American Awareness Week, there were a lot of Native Americans on campus at the time, we were talking about reality and just hippie talk, this old elder came walking. He was standing listening, standing on the side of the cafeteria listening to us, and he walked up to us and said, "Children," he says, "you don't understand." And we go, "Huh?" Suddenly this silence dropped like a heavy blanket. And he said, 500 years ago, the human experiment was canceled. And we go, "What?" "Canceled? Well, what's all this?" And he said, "Echoes." What's going on here? Now that I'm dead, maybe we can talk about what's going on here.
Right, please.
What's going on here is this is a bizarre reality, which terminates with your impermanency. The fact that one is impermanent and will go zap someday and be gone. Where we go, I don't know. I really don't know. I've had near-death experiences, NDOs they call them, where I went out into a place which was identifiable, at a couple of levels. And that really happened to me at my farm. I went out of my OBE, I went out of my body, I was still conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I experienced a continuing existence, beyond the body, which was very, in fact, it happened twice, as though the experience had to repeat itself so it would sink into my thick head. And it was the whole thing was triggered by a circle of beings, by the way, that were tall, slender, ancestral, angelic type beings that said, "Now is the time to experience this." And then I went OBE. But the thing is, I came back. I came back here, and so I really don't know at this point, and I'm not sure anybody knows what it's like when the jig is finally up. I think we experience many deaths during our life. The wizard and the wreck, where we keep getting busted. All our arrogance, Boy, what an arrogant world we live in. You've got the Rothschilds and Helicopter Bernanke and Wolfowitz and all these arrogant assholes, running our country right now. And they don't get it. They don't get it, you know, about this impermanency of being here.
Hmm. They're about to get it.
Why are they wasting their time, you know, trying to play power trip? You know, that's an awful lot of work to hold on to that.
Oh, God. And
level of illusion, you know.
And aggravation, you know what I mean? My God. I mean, just imagine trying to be one of these clowns right now. It's got to just be, you know, people actually, there are two sides of this story, right? You get, okay, everybody looks at the economic situation, not just in the U.S., but globally. There's a whole bunch of things that are happening that are very, very concerning, you know, to a lot of people. I mean, there's food riots going on because people don't have enough money to buy food. A lot of these things are spin-offs of what's happening here, you know what I mean, and in Europe. But anyway, you get the one side of the group of people who say, well, yeah, this is just a further implementation of a plan by the New World Order types, you know, and this is just the next phase of the takeover of planet Earth and the, you know, that whole line of thought. And that, you know, in the halls of power, you know, the people that actually pull the strings, that those people are drinking champagne and things are going exactly as planned. I tend to choose the other side of the coin. My intuition is that it has been like that in the past, and certainly there are agendas that are, you know, being pursued by nefarious gangs of all kinds of different types. But my impression is that nobody has any control over what's happening right now, and there's a whole lot of formerly very confident and arrogant types that are, if they haven't lost their confidence yet, you know, they're about to, because I don't think things are going the way that anybody really thinks that they're going to go, and I don't think that anybody's in control of it, certainly not the people at the Federal Reserve or in Washington.
Yeah, I'm back on my website. See, I have a second. I try to deal with everything that comes to mind, at least my poor mind. And I got this section I've been running for quite some time. Well, ever since 9/11, I got political because I felt something was up.
Oh, man.
Wrong. I mean, why is that? Those towers collapsed at the speed of gravity, you know, whoosh, and then vaporized. Steel and concrete vaporized and become this powdery dust. And then to hear their explanation for what happened, you know, that immediately, on day one, on September 11th, 2001, I thought they were full of crap.
I know. I mean, I'll never forget the day. You and me were on the phone most of the day together and conversing via instant message. And I still, to this day, can't believe the story was bought so easily. I mean, it wasn't even a very good one. I mean, but it just, when the media repeats it over and over again, it really is a mind control type of scenario that gets set up, and people just believe what they're hearing. I mean, it's amazing, actually. I mean, just remarkable, because I was just, God, my God, I mean, like you say, I mean, it just wasn't right. It just wasn't.
So I'm
right.
Running this section now. I did a formal command center on 2000, the 9/11 incident, and we did that. It was involved many people, Mike and many others.
Oh, for years, I mean.
Reporting on it formally for a year and a half or 2 years, and then of course, still the watch goes on, and more information keeps coming in all the time. And now, in my section called Fun with Fascists, cute, huh? You've got stuff like the UN official call for study of neocons' role in 9/11, you know, amongst other little goodies like seizing water, the Water Restoration Act of 2007. It ain't oil, it's water. You know, now they want all the water, including the water that collects in your rain barrel, which is illegal to do in some states now, to collect rainwater.
Collect rainwater, yeah.
Fourth Amendment does not apply to military operations within the U.S. Let me see. McCain's preacher.
Oh, my God.
Preaching end-time confrontation with Iran because it fulfills prophecy. Go bomb the hell out of them because it's in the Bible. Cheney, others okayed harsh interrogation, torturing people. My county, King County, facing possible budget meltdown. No kidding.
Right, that's there in Seattle, yeah.
Yeah, and on and on and on and on.
You know, you've got a... There's a story on the... Well, I want to mention this, the thing about the rednecks. This is great, actually, because it's information that will be valuable here in Missouri, and people maybe will think twice about when they use the word. But also, I wanted to, you mentioned Einstein briefly when we were talking about physics. You know, he was the anniversary of his death is on the 18th of April, and I actually had a note to mention that tonight. So now's a good time to mention it because. You know, Albert Einstein, you know, whether he was, you know, whatever you think about him and the Einsteinian ideas that came from his work and his research, I sure was fascinated and still am to a certain extent by the guy, even though I believe that there's much more going on and much less, and I don't really believe he had the answers to every question, but he certainly was a great thinker and a great, with an imagination, Kent. What an imagination that guy had.
And he knew he didn't have the answers.
Uh-huh. He was very humble, and the more he learned about what he was involved in, the more humility I think that he found. He's just a remarkable person.
Anyway, rednecks.
Yeah, rednecks, man.
Hey, you rednecks. You realize heroes you were?
That's right.
Someday?
We got all kinds of rednecks here in Missouri, and let's let them know what they really are.
Well, a redneck is not some guy that goes to church and dumps the Bible and votes for George Bush. A redneck is a dude that resists, in a very most patriotic way, resists fascism. And they wore a red bandana to go against the mine owners back at the turn of the century in the Leyte Rebellion. You know, they were much like the revolutionary warriors that started our country.
Yeah, let me...
And they were called Bolsheviks for doing it.
Let me.
Where did they go?
Who knows? They came back. You know, came here to Missouri.
Somebody flipped the coin, and now tails came up because what the rednecks were heroic, gutsy, non-wimpy people who went up against the mine owners who were killing them. I mean, their whole job was to kill them, basically, and to take 8-year-old boys down in the mines, mm-hmm. kill them too, and. They revolted, went up in armed revolution against the mine owners, and stood them off.
This is amazing, Kent. Let me read a little clip from the story. Here's a little history lesson for y'all. The title here says "Origins of the Word Redneck," and the story is a. The idea is that the original redneck heroes were resisting fascism. Here's a quote. Mother Jones didn't take into account that the situation was significantly different. Nevertheless, the call went out, and men soon began organizing for the march. The United Mine Workers Association never claimed nor attempted to be part of this march. Despite the lack of a leader, the thousands of men who gathered near Charleston began to form military-style units. Not surprising, since many were veterans of World War I. Their only identifiable uniform was a red bandana knotted around their neck or right sleeve. The badge gave them the name Rednecks. Huh.
Amazing.
Amazing. So, these are the heroes.
So there you go, rednecks. Get with it, you know.
That's right. Look at your name.
Don't be a yuppie redneck. A yuppie redneck is somebody going around, yep, 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 whenever... orders come pissing down from the powers to be.
Yep.
You know,
yep,
that
yep.
isn't a redneck to artificially buy into all that crap. Redneck is a guy that wears a red bandana and has the courage to resist horse pucky. And who's a redneck now? Well, we got some. The longshoremen to close ports in West Coast to protest war. Now, there's a redneck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Iraq veterans against the war seized National Archive building. What about that?
How about that? That's one you didn't hear on the national news, right?
And some rednecks are doing what maybe I thought I was doing back when I was had my farm. I was to go organize my own lifestyle, so whatever happened didn't matter. I still could grow my veggies and smoke my pot and do whatever the hell I wanted to do, whether the money was worth anything or not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are going into sort of survival mode, which is cool. Getting property up in the middle of everywhere, a bunch of cows and some chickens, and loading up on ammo and ready to cover the perimeter if they have to. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
But I'm not so sure that's not a workable idea for me anymore. I'm too old to do that crap.
Well, I can't even believe it, actually, when I think about some of the stuff and where it's going and where it's all coming from.
And here are some real heroes, like you were mentioning in your preview of the evening, the alternate fuel guy.
Oh, man.
You know, if you really want to fight back, quit burning gasoline in your damn
jalopy
gas tank. You don't need to do that anymore. You never did. You know, Henry Ford wanted to burn hemp alcohol.
Yeah.
And Diesel wanted to burn vegetable oil, soybean oil, and stuff like that. There are people doing it. There's a show on cable now called Cool Fuel or something like that, where a guy has traveled all around the country in vehicles, and so far he has burned no gasoline because he's running on vegetable oil and for the diesel. Or electric, and he's getting his electricity at wind power plants, turbines, where he charges up his scooter. And he's riding around in experimental cars that go from 0 to 60 in like 3 seconds and beat the average Ferrari, but they're electric powered, and they're often topped with solar panels. And he's gone all around the country. He's from Australia, and he's going all around the country, and he has been doing so and filming this expedition, burning no gasoline, but traveling on many different alternate vehicles.
Right.
Now, there's a bunch of guys in Australia that are carrying on with Stanley Meyer technology, using hydroxy gas in hydrogen boosters. I'm not exactly sure I can interpret that because I'm not an engineer. It's based on freeing up nitrogen rather than hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have, what's his name? Your boy, the cancer-killing guy.
Well, John Canzius, the guy who discovered the cancer, the RF... radio frequency cancer cure, essentially. You know that was on 60 Minutes last night?
Gee, it's amazing.
It was on 60 Minutes last night, Kent. And I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, they basically said, I mean, it wasn't a hit piece. You know what I mean? If you go to the 60 Minute, and I don't watch the television, but I got email this morning because I've been talking about Rustin Roy for a couple of weeks, and he's the physicist eventually confirmed this burning of salt water, but he didn't get involved until later. The guy that discovered it was this guy John Canzius, who was trying to come up with a cure for cancer, which he apparently has done. But as a side note, when he was doing some experimentation, he discovered that whatever was being gassed off from a little solution sodium chloride and water that he had in a vessel, that when he passed an RF wave through it, that the gas that came off of the thing burned, and it burned hot, 3,000 degrees, right? So Rustin Roy, who's this physicist at Penn State and a renowned materials scientist around the world, he somehow got a load of John Canzius, and he couldn't believe what he was seeing. And like a good scientist should do, rather than just discount it out of hand, he went down there. Guess whose name is on that paper, other than Royal, I'm sorry, Royal, see my Freudian slip is showing. I was going to say Royal Raymond Wright because that's who this guy Rustam Roy reminds me of. But in the paper that he published in the Materials Research Innovations Journal just this last March, I mean just a month ago, he co-authored the paper with John Canisius, the guy from Florida, who has no traditional scientific training, doesn't have a PhD, doesn't have a doctorate, doesn't have, you know, a physics degree and like that. He's more of a tinkerer.
He was a broadcaster.
Yeah, and he knows a lot about RF, you know. And he's been a lab guy, I think, in the past. But the point is that...
The thing is, he got cancer and had to figure out a way to fix it.
That's right. And in the meantime, he may have discovered an alternative energy source for us that could solve a whole lot of problems. And I think that Rustam Roy deserves a lot of credit because he had the courage to go down there and actually meet John Canisius and find out what he was actually doing. And when he did find out, he was so convinced that he decided to prove it, which he has done, and he co-authored the paper with John Canisius. In other words, I think it was very big of him to have John's name on there right with him.
Yeah, you hit water with its resonant frequency, and it busts the molecules
right,
up.
Right, right.
And
now,
people realize,
I'm sorry that, you know, people don't realize, for a lot of people, I think, misunderstand the significance of breaking the bond between hydrogen and oxygen in water. It's a big deal. It's not easy to do. But there's a tremendous amount of energy there if you can.
Well, the guys that still own stock in Exxon say, no, it's no good, it's no good,
yeah.
it's no good, because you have to hit it with radio frequency, and so you're putting power in. You know,
well, sure, you got to put power.
It's not free energy. Well, of course, it's not free energy.
Right. I mean, petroleum is not free energy.
Look at petroleum. You got to dig it out of the. You got to suck it out of the ground.
Right.
You know, in some platform in the North Seas. You know, during Hurricane.
Yeah, during Hurricane Betty.
And then you got to ship it to wherever, Japan, and refine it, and then it.
Oh, yeah. There's a tremendous amount that goes into. Getting a gallon of gasoline out of the pump at Total Petroleum, and you know, from when it was pulled out of the ground, and this is this thing about burning salt water is a big deal, and the fact that Rustam Roy is involved in it, I think, is a very encouraging thing, because he's not a no name. I mean, he is by no means, by zero means, an unknown scientist. He is a very, very well known. And highly regarded scientist, and who has a tremendous amount of discoveries and inventions to his name already.
Meanwhile, they're trying to fool us. Honda is, I noticed, watching golf, the Masters Open. The big ads were being run by Honda concerning their new FCX Clarity
the fuel
machine.
Cell. Yeah.
And they say, hey, we got a fuel cell car here. They don't have a fuel cell. What are they talking about? Mm. You got to go buy hydrogen at the hydrogen station.
Right.
And then what does it do? It turns the hydrogen into electricity to run its electric motors. Well, sorry, guys, that might be a splashy car you got there, but that ain't it.
That ain't what we're talking
because
about.
Because Stan Myers and others were running their car with onboard generators, and I got a picture of a guy from Australia doing the same thing, standing by his car with the hood open. They're generating it on board and then burning it as it's produced.
Awesome.
That's a ticket, guys.
That is, and that's what we need to pursue, and do not be misdirected. There's a whole lot of misdirection going on out there. So, look, we're a little past my top of the hour break here, so let's take one and come back in just a bit, okay?
See what happens next. Okay.
All right, we'll do it, everybody. Kent Stedman, www.cyberspaceorbit.com. On the web, as always, you can see Kent's website, and it is a remarkable thing to ponder once you get in there, and you can get lost in there. And I have many times for many years. So put it in your bookmarks and take a surf on over there, cyberspaceorbit.com. You can always link there from my site at Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com, and the website here at the radio station, KOPN.org. All right, we will play a piece of music here from these... great musicians from South America. This one is called Yamor. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Kichwa Mashis. That is a song called Yamor. And you'll listen to it here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan, and this is Radio Orbit. My guest this evening is Mr. Kent Stedman. He is the wizard behind CyberspaceOrbit.com, an amazing website that has been, up in Adam on the web now for at least 10 years and probably 11 or 12, knowing Kent. But anyway, it's a pleasure to have him on the air with us, and right back to you. Hey, Bartle.
Hey. There's something I want to say. You know, I've been sort of smart-mouthing this life-death business, and it was actually very scary. It's a very scary thing to not be able to breathe and finally end up in the hospital and all that. And I put a note up on my website saying, hey, I'm sorry my website is being neglected, you know, but here's what's happening.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
And I'm so grateful for people's response. I suddenly got tons of emails from really wonderful, concerned people, you know, saying this and that, suggesting alternative remedies. Because a lot of us are broke. We can't afford going to the hospital, and I would not be able to either were it not for the fact that my wife is busting her butt, you know, serving banquets downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the hardest work I've ever witnessed. And thus she is able to, on a monthly basis, make enough hours to get this insurance, so, you know, which is the only thing that allowed me to go into the hospital. Otherwise, I probably would be gone at the moment, because they did do something that was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Like you break a bone, you got to go have the darn thing reset.
Right.
The mainstream medical was good for that.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know enough to do that. They needed to drain my body of all these fluids that were causing the congestion.
Right.
But then the congestion is caused by the heart, which has gotten weak. For some reason, unknown to myself and even my cardiologist, my heart got weak over this past year. I was not able to remove all that crap from my body. Well, anyway, I'm so grateful for the people that helped. In some sense, you know, Patreon helped money to help me pay for what's left over after insurance kicks in. It's still a lot of money.
I know.
Because the insurance pays 10% of a major hospitalization and the outpatient follow-up, which is once a week going down to the doctors. And
they pay 10%?
Yeah.
That's all?
No, I have to pay.
You have to pay. Oh, the patient pays 10%. Yeah, okay.
That's still an awful lot of money.
Well, yeah.
You know, I'm not a very wealthy person. I live pretty close to the belt here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm so grateful for that. It was really unsolicited at this, although I do panhandle to keep my website going. It was unintentional this time, and a lot of people sent help.
Yeah.
And I, you know, thank you so much.
Well, you have a lot of...
It amazes me. It totally amazes Wendy that people have that kindness in their souls to be concerned.
Well, it doesn't amaze me, because I know the kind of people that, you know, that hang out at Cyberspace Orbit, because a lot of them immigrate to and from my site. Your site and my site are, you know, sort of connected in a weird way, just the way you and I are. But these people, even though I've never really had an experience like yours, I'm always delighted and never cease to be amazed by the humanness of so many of these people, and they're good people with compassion, you know, and people who actually care about us. I think, you know, it's funny, the radio program is not a big popular radio show with a whole lot of listeners, but I tell you, man, these people, they're very authentic, and I think that they prove it. They proved it to you over the winter.
Well, you know, Mike, you and I met online.
Mm-hmm.
We became friends before we actually met.
Sure. It was a remarkable experience just getting to know you in that fashion. I mean, hell, I knew you before I met you in the flesh. I knew you.
and a lot of my closest friends I've never met because, mm-hmm. except in exchange of ideas in email.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I deem them amongst my closest personal friends because I've been on the internet for so long, and that's the level that I've been able to reach out and meet other people.
Yeah, because I mean, you're not particularly out and about in a social way. You stay in the cave there for the most part, and your connection to the outside world and your friends has been digital for the most part.
Yeah, I went on the internet because I've got a questioning mind and it won't go away. I'm always looking for something.
God.
And it's been that way all my life. Creative imagination, whatever you want to call it. Let's not get fancy. I just don't know a lot. And so I have to keep looking and looking. And what I usually get back are more questions, which is cool.
Yeah.
It's learned me to regard life and death, this whole experience, in a sense of wonder and awe, which might be it. That might be the answer in its sense, you know.
Well, I think that's what the Hadron Collider is showing scientists, and that's why they always have to build another one. You know, because I think that what they're really seeing is wonder and awe. And I think that they probably saw that the first time they did one of these wild experiments. I don't think they're finding new particles. I think they just like to do it. I think because it's filled with wonder and awe and mystery, I think.
Well, that's our collective search, and both on your program and my website. Mm-hmm. And Mike and I finally met. I knew that when I got ill, that it was a deep concern to Mike because we're very close friends now.
Jesus.
Well, one of us experiences the other one does too.
Oh man, I mean, to the point.
And I know Mike did some. He got sick too. That was weird. He got pneumonia, and he did some deep spiritual work for me, and I could feel you doing that, Mike.
Hmm.
And I appreciate that. And everybody else that's out there and helping out, you know. My efforts are not an entitlement. I do panhandle.
Well, you know, I
learned that from Kenny Hall. You know, while I was a hotshot college instructor working for teacher's wages in Fresno, you know, I was also on the side. I was out there in the community. That's when I was out there and not in the cave. I was really out there. And I was learning other ways, which I'm very grateful for, because right now my advanced degrees and my teaching experience are not getting me through.
Mm.
And what's getting me through is what Kenny Hall taught me.
Yeah.
You know, if you're broke and down and out, you know, don't quit. Grab your fiddle and go out on the street, play a tune. You know? And he took me out there and we put our cases out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed. It gave me a lot of confidence because no matter how bad things get, you still got your fiddle in your case.
Yeah. You know? Let me ask you a question. We're sort of deep with regard to this life and death stuff and illness and health and all this. I remember talking with Grandfather Wallace about Crazy Horse one time, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Wallace was from that line, the same family line as Crazy Horse was Wallace's. Oh, God, I don't know, great uncle or something like that, or grandfather, whatever it was. But anyway, you know, I had read and heard stories of what an amazing warrior that Crazy Horse was. His Lakota name is Tasuka Witko.
And his nickname was Curly.
Yeah, Curly, that's what they called him. That's what the white guys called him, right?
Well, the Native Americans called him Curly because he had very light complexion.
Oh, all right. I didn't know that. Anyway, Wallace and I were talking about it, and I said, well, you know, there are these stories and legends that in battle, Crazy Horse essentially couldn't be killed, and there were stories that came from the cavalry and the American army that were just legendary about this guy that would ride through a rain of bullets or whatever and somehow remain unharmed. And even when he was eventually killed, it was in an underhanded, cowardly manner and not in battle. They said that they couldn't kill the guy
in
battle.
They tricked him, yeah.
Right? So my question, to Grandfather Wallace was, how is that possible? Is it, first of all, is it true? And how is it possible that, that a man could ride through a hail of bullets and it's documented by many different sources that he did this frequently and that they just couldn't kill him. I said, what? And you know what he said to me? He said, Mike, you cannot kill that which the Creator wishes to remain alive. And it's a God statement, essentially. And so for people who don't buy into the idea that there are forces greater than material, at work on this planet, well, then this isn't for them. But that was simply his explanation. If you are in good favor with the grandfathers and with Tunkashula, the great grandfather, the great spirit, well, then nothing can harm you. And, it sort of mirrors the ideas of many religious traditions. If you got God on your side, you can do anything.
Well, for him to say that, and this is the regard I have for Wallace Black Elk, too. He's a genuine human being.
Oh.
For him to say that, he had to experience that, I would say, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew what he was talking about, not in theory, but because...
He knew.
He knew because he'd been there. And now he has indeed passed on to the other side. And, but he lived a challenging existence himself.
Oh, my God.
He probably took a few bullets.
Well, he was certainly abused and used and beaten up severely many, many times in his life. I know that.
I mean, we went to that powwow in Denver, and some of the stories we heard were awesome, like concerning Wallace and Grandfather CeeLo and so on. CeeLo reestablished the ghost dance. Which was forbidden by law since wounded me. And this little wiry shaman started it up again, but it was not without taking a few bullets. What was it, the second or third year they did the dance?
Mm-hmm.
They reintroduced the dance. They were literally invaded by choppers.
Yeah, federal marshals.
The feds just came in full force, like a military operation.
Well, they didn't stop Grandfather CeeLo because they did the Sundance on his ancestral land every day up until the day he died. Not every day, every year,
Well, Mike and I, at this wonderful event that we went to, we were blown away because not only were we being deeply impressed by the testimonials coming from Wallace and Pansy and CeeLo and Grandfather Martin, but we were also impressed in the small crowd that gathered to hear this, there were some really unusual customers, that Mike and I were sort of walking around trying to figure out, people from the Department of the DOE.
DARPA, there were man. Remember met those people from DARPA? My God.
There were people from DARPA. There were people from SAIC.
That girl from DARPA, man, she followed me around for years. She still, every once in a while, shows up and calls me and stuff.
Very interesting person. And we were going, what the heck's going on here? How come all these feds are skirting around? And out in the patio between presentations, we started talking to some of the bodyguards that were around there. They literally had you know who I'm talking about. They have the native elders have certain guys there that are like ex-bikers and things like that that sort of watch out for them, that have become spiritual themselves and sort of watch out for them. And they were saying, well, you got to understand that this is not unusual for us, you know, to see this sort of intrusion. But the power structure.
Well, I always thought they were just there because you and me were there.
Yeah.
Well,
so Mike and I were dogging these people around. What are you doing here?
Yeah, we really did give them a rough time. That was funny. It's like, come on, don't tell me you're just here because you're interested in the ghost dance. You work for DARPA. Who do you think I am? You think I'm stupid?
There was a guy there that gave a talk. He was sort of a crisis intervention.
Oh,
or something.
Yeah.
Remember that guy?
His name was Dudley Weeks or Dudley Meeks or something like that.
Interesting guy, because he had to leave early because he was needed in the Middle East.
Remember what he said about crisis mediation?
Yeah.
What did he say?
What did he say? Oh, yeah. I said, well, how do you go to like the Israel-Gaza situation over there and intervene? He says, go to the women. Is that what you remember?
Yep, go to the women, yeah. He said, if you want to straighten things out, go find the guy who's in charge and then go find his wife. Talk to her. And you know, of course, there hasn't been much luck in any mediation there in that part of the world for quite some time, and I think that's by design, frankly. But
must really be crazy over there.
Oh, my God. Can you even imagine what's going on over there? I mean, this is just the state of the world. I mean, we're highly insulated from it here, even with CNN and Fox News and all that. But, my God, there's a tremendous amount of the world that is in dire straits and very, you know, very tenuous and unsustainable situation for a whole lot of things and a whole lot of people and a whole lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's like they're playing this huge game of risk, and the reason we're in Iraq is because it's a good place on the board to be, you know. It's a strategic point in order to continue the idea of empirehood.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bartle, you know what? I told the listeners that I'd open the phone lines too. So I'm just going to remind them that the phone number is 573-443-8255. If you want to give us a buzz, we'll probably take a break here in about 5 minutes. But if you want to call and chat with me and Kent, or ask Kent a question or anything like that, you're more than welcome to. And we'll just put that out there one more time, 573-443-8255, if you want to chat with us.
Cool. So,
yeah, we'll see if we get any takers. I've had people tell me a lot lately, Mike, you need to take more phone calls, but then every time I do it, nobody calls.
So
I don't know. In the meanwhile...
I feel very privileged to be on the show, considering some of the guests you've got forthcoming. Oh, my gosh, you know, you've really been doing a great job lining up crucial people.
Mm. I've been lucky. And my grandfather's helped me out sometimes with my guest selection, if you know what I mean.
That's true.
and you're at the top of the list, my friend. I meant it when I started the show. I mean, the first show of Radio Orbit, the first show I ever did was with you. And if I have anything to say about it, it'll be the last one, too. Hold on. Somebody's calling. Okay, let's say hi. Good evening there. You're in Orbit. Who's this?
Hi, I'm sorry. I couldn't resist calling. I'm on the road. You asked me.
Uh-huh. Who is this? What's your name?
Howdy. My name is Val Gurman.
Hi, Val. Pleasure to have you on the program here.
Hey, Val.
Well, I'm better. I am terrified at what's going on in the Middle East.
Hmm.
In our name, it's just not right. And the fact that it apparently is going to continue for years to come is really beyond sad.
Well,
it's an awful thing that should stop.
Mm. Did you say you were a veteran, Val?
Yes, I served in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Well, gosh, I mean, Kent, you probably relate better to Val than me, but I, my... my first thought is, well, yes, it may go on for some time, but it also might not. And there are, I think, some pretty powerful forces at work that are also working pretty hard to get us out of that mess and to straighten some things out. So we'll have to see where it all ends up, but I couldn't agree more. I mean, it is a horrible situation, and it's a continuation of a long string of horrible situations that have been going on for a long, long time. And, you know, war has been the staple, you know, the way humans have done business for the most part for at least recorded history. And, you know,
and it's so terrible that when you commit a country to this path, you better have an ironclad reason to visit this kind of destruction on another group of people. And, of course, if every bomb we drop over there falls here also, may not be blowing apart buildings, but it has its effect. And these people we have in charge right now seem to not care about the collateral damage, as it's called, either over there or over here. And it's absolutely amazing to me that the financial catastrophe that we seem to be headed for, they do not care. It really makes you wonder, you know, what the future really has in store, well, there is a future.
Kent, what do you make of Val's comments?
Well, we've been in a merchant warrior culture now all my life, and probably long before I was around, and that's what they do. You know, they profit from that. As long as the profit's there, and we don't resist the notion on an individual basis, it's going to continue, as far as I can tell. I mean, what can we do? Well, do what we can. I'm an old man. I can't go. You know, I went to the Seattle protest and got maced from a distance. And I used to do that as a younger man, really put my body out there to protest this type of activity. But what I can do now is simply keep tabs on it and run my website. And we all need to do what we can do.
Well,
very sad thing. I mean, that's the understatement of the year. It's
and scary. You're right. I get scared too.
Well, I agree with both of you, but I got to throw the hopeful note in, because I'm not Pollyannish about it. I realize the level of of sinister behavior that these people are comfortable with. I know too much to be comfortable with any of it, but I also just feel that there are things going on that are not being discussed. They're not being talked about on CNN. They're not being talked about on Amy Goodman's show. They're not being talked about anywhere, because they have to do with things that are far more esoteric than the mainstream media is comfortable or adequately prepared to talk about. And
well, they're owned and controlled by the same people. You can't, unfortunately, you're just not going to get any real information out of them on any consistent basis because of who owns them.
No, and I understand that, but I even think that there are good, you know, people that are trying to do good work that are still out of the loop. I think that there are things going on that are, in my opinion, are going to surprise people, and it's not going to be anything that anybody thought. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, there's certainly just as much chance that I'm wrong. Nobody knows the future. The future's cool. You can talk about it because it's sort of a fire-free zone, because nobody knows what it is. And so, I always make sure that that's clear when people start talking about the future, like, oh my God, you know, it's, you know, we're doomed, we're going to be in Iraq forever, and blah, 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 and we're going to go into Iran, and well, Nobody knows that. Nobody knows the future. That's based on the information that we have, which is completely inadequate, and it goes right along with the propaganda that's being spewed at us. They want us to believe we're going to be there forever. They want us to believe we're going to go into Iran. Doesn't mean that that's actually going to happen. And I'm hoping and praying that we come out of this and make it right and don't continue along the path any longer than we have to. You know, you can always change the path you're on.
Why do you think we're in Iraq? Do you feel it's for basically the same reasons as we were in Vietnam?
I mean, why are we in Iraq?
Do you feel like it's the same set of circumstances that put us in Vietnam or other wars in the past?
Well, I mean, in my view, you know, we're in the Middle East because that's for the same reason the Romans took Egypt at the time of Julius Caesar.
Right.
I mean, if you're the world's leading military and economic power, unfortunately, that's where the petroleum is, and the U.S. dollar is basically backed by petroleum now. And we don't have a choice in that regard. I mean, they're going to have to be there. There was a recently a reference to, I saw in an article on one of the European newspapers that mentioned the fact that in 1973, the Pentagon wanted to just go ahead and take the oil then.
Yeah.
And, which is, purely from a geopolitical standpoint, that's what should have happened. And they didn't do it. They checked out. They didn't have the guts to do it. Well, it's too late now. They think that they can go in there and physically seize this stuff. And, it's a disaster now. And, it's too late. And I hate to be, sad tidings or whatever, but we've been in Korea 50 years. We're playing with dynamite over there. We can't leave. We have set loose forces over there that cannot be controlled. Barely can be kept the lid on now with 150,000 troops. They're going to be there forever. Until we're basically too broke to continue. That's the path they've put us on. They know nothing else, unfortunately.
Mm. I agree.
All right, Val. Well,
I
appreciate you taking the time to chat with us, man.
All right, take care now.
Yeah, hang in there. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All right. Once again, if you want to give us a call, you can do that, 573-443-8255. We got another 25 minutes or so with Kent Stedman on the web, cyberspaceorbit.com. Let me take a look in the chat room, Kent, see if anybody's
got it. Yeah, Teach us. The guy that just called taught me something.
Hmm.
You know, he's actually... I never went to war because I was 4F. But you people that have been there right in the thick of battle, you know, teach us, tell us what's going on. You were numb, and you know, so you know.
Yeah, well, I know. I don't claim to know, but I don't think it's good, you know. But like I said, my reaction is to do what I do, try to do my own work as best I can do it, and hope that other people are doing the same thing, and that we will not be stuck in the same situation forever. I mean, I'm just more hopeful, I guess, about it than many people. So we'll find out.
But physically, what do you think is going to have to happen? Are we really going to have to just go broke and cease to exist as a nation before it all will cease, before the warfare will stop? Is that the formula we're locked into? Do we have to cease to be the United States of America, to be a warrior merchant society?
Hey, Marty, you still there?
Yeah.
Sorry, we had somebody calling, and I think we may have them here. You want to take another phone call?
Oh, yeah.
Frank.
Hello. Hi, who's this?
John.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, John.
Yes, John. How you doing?
How are you, John? Pleasure to hear from you.
I'm doing pretty well.
Good.
Oh, man, it's good to hear from you.
It's good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you.
It's good to hear you sounding so good, Ken.
Wow, that's an unexpected treat. Dr. John Shelyak. What's on your mind, Dr. Shelyak?
No, I'm just listening to your dialogue. It was interesting, so I thought I would call in, say hi, and say I am enjoying your conversation and just wanted to connect.
Yeah, you've really helped me out because John shared with me some of his own personal experiences with health issues, you know, gave me the courage to do what I had to do and get checked out.
Uh-huh.
This is not a normal policy for myself. I haven't been to a doctor in 30, 40 years, but I had to or I'd have been dead.
Well, it took Dr. John to tell you to go see the other doc, so.
Really?
That's the healer in him, you see.
Sometimes we have to do things that are beyond what we would normally allow ourselves or believe that we can do.
Mm. What's
bottom line. That's, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was going to ask you what's happening in Santa Fe.
We're finally getting spring, which is a good thing. You know, it didn't seem like it was ever going to get here. You know, of course, for us, winter is mostly cold. So for me, it's just been kind of getting into the spring mode, trying to finish up some work on my house, lay out what I'm going to be doing with my real interests over the next few months, that kind of thing.
Right.
We had a meeting last week that we hosted here in Santa Fe, meeting that kind of takes place at different cities around the country over the course of any given year, and it's the first time we did a meeting here, and it really went well. I think everybody enjoyed themselves. It was fun for me for a change, rather than hopping out of a plane and being concerned whether American Airlines is going to cancel flights, etc. It was nice just being here and being the host for a change.
Right. Hey, John, I meant to ask you. You know, there was a outrageous thing that happened there in Santa Fe just last week. You know Rupert Sheldrake, right?
I certainly do. Uh-huh.
You know that he was doing a presentation there in Santa Fe last week and he was stabbed?
No. Didn't hear that. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And he's okay. I mean, it's now sort of, he's been interviewed after the fact and everything, but when it actually happened, it was a very weird and strange incident, and I was going to ask you if you had heard anything about it, because it was a conference on consciousness and the human mind or something, I forget, but it was a whole bunch of consciousness guys, you know, and girls that were doing a conference there, and I'm trying to pull up the story on my website, but of course I've got the frozen computer syndrome right now. But at any rate, just do a search.
I haven't heard about it. No, that is interesting. I don't know. Do you know where it was being held?
You know, I'd be able to tell you if I could get at it. But it was I know it was in Santa Fe, and I don't know. I know that you like Rupert, and I know that you're probably familiar with his work, and
certainly.
And he may still be there. I think he may still be there. Again, I can't tell you exactly, but I just thought it was.
Here it is. It was in New Mexico, and I don't subscribe to the New Mexican, so I didn't really hear about it. And of course, I was totally immersed in the meeting that we were having.
Right. Now the weird thing is,
well, it was actually April 2nd it happened.
Yeah.
So it's
2 weeks ago.
In a way, yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, it happened, and the reason that I look at everything as synchronicity, and I don't think anything happens for no reason, and it was. You know, Terrence and Rupert were good friends, you know, and this happened basically on the 8th anniversary of Terrence's death. He died on the 3rd, on April 3rd, and it was that night, the night before on April 2nd when this thing happened. But at any rate, that's not what we're here to talk about, but because it happened there in your town, I thought I just would mention it to you, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 33-year-old from Japan apparently was the culprit.
Yeah, it's a weird story, and
I was kind of reading through this. Strange. But you know, probably no coincidence that it was so close to Terrence's death date.
Well, yeah, the reason I mention is because of the time wave and your work with resonance and, you know, resonant time periods and the way that the whole things sort of unfold. Sometimes things like that may not seem to be expectable, but then again, they can be.
It's going to be worth taking a look at the time wave to see what shows up. You know, mm-hmm. You have me interested now, so I'll definitely.
Yeah, I figured so. Anyway, well, Kent, chat with John for a minute, and I'm going to go get a glass of water, okay?
Okay.
All right, I'll be right back.
So how have you been feeling anyway, Kent?
I've been feeling good, but then my cardiologist says, well, you shouldn't be feeling good because your heart is still only pumping at 20%.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I feel great. Well, I have taken the water pills and so on. Mm-hmm. I've continued with the prescriptions, mm-hmm. and I've lost a lot of weight, and I feel better than I felt in many, many years.
Uh-huh.
So
that's a good thing.
I don't feel that perishable at the moment.
Well,
I feel good.
Well, losing excess weight under those conditions can be really helpful. So, but, you know, I think it's just to focus on healing and moving through that, facing it, moving through it, that really helps.
Well, you had tests done, too. What was the after you were done with all that, what did you do?
Mine turned out to be related, as I think I may have mentioned, to mold exposure, and a toxin, actually.
Yeah.
That happened for me in my house. But, you know, before I knew that was happening, I had all kinds of things that were going on physically, including heart, lung, every system. You know, one of the things that I learned about mold toxin is that it's nasty shit, and it's literally impacts every system in the body, and I was experiencing that, not knowing why it was happening.
How did you fight it? You cleaned your house out, but I mean...
Well, I certainly got it in my house and did a total remodel, but I also did a variety of things, including things that I know how to do, as well as using some pretty hard drugs.
Yeah.
To get rid of antifungal drugs, to get rid of some of this stuff that was happening.
It rings a bell because I've got that dang black mold in my... Well, I'm in Seattle. Everything's moldy.
Uh-huh.
Including
me. Well,
that
could be a factor. I mean, it's hard to tell, but I know for a fact that here, it's actually, it can be actually worse in New Mexico because people think it's dry here. So, what's the problem, right? Well, the problem is, because it's dry, you don't know what's going on in your walls when it's going on in your walls. If you live in a wet climate, you kind of expect you're going to have at least that strong possibility that if you have leaks anywhere, you're going to have a mold problem. Here, people don't believe that it is a problem when, in fact, it is. So.
Yeah, I live next to the laundromat, and one day it just flooded my whole house practically. They had to come in and really do a number in here.
Yeah.
Thank God it wasn't my fault.
Well, before I knew what was going on, I was having, major heart arrhythmia. And
what was that like? What did you experience in that?
My heart rate was, up around 180 or something like that. It was just, and not slowing down. So
sort of a railgun heart attack?
I took a fast trek into the ER and spent the night there in cardiac intensive care. They didn't know what was going on. Actually, the next day, I had a heart cath and was told by the cardiologist that the arteries of a 20-year-old, so clearly that wasn't my problem. And at that point, nobody knew what was going on. So it took me several months after that to learn that I actually had a mold problem.
Well, I really appreciate your communication on that, because that was key in helping me decide what to do next, because I was getting nowhere on my own.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. These are the kinds of things, why we're connected. None of us can be strong in the face of certain challenges 100% of the time. So.
Man, I really, really hope I can make it to Missouri. I don't know yet.
Uh-huh.
I've got a son graduating from college in June, and I'm having a hard time keeping up with my medical condition and the bills and all that.
Uh-huh.
But if there's any possible way, I'll be there because I really miss you all.
Yeah. Well, I know if Brian's graduation is that weekend, that I don't expect you. But if your health is okay and it's not Brian's graduation weekend, we'll figure out a way to get you here. So. And by the way, both of you, John and Kent, Chris Robinson, my friend Chris and your friend Chris, who you met at the last Solstice party. Remember harmonica player, great singer that you guys are both talking to. He's here in the studio with me. Just wanted to say hi.
Hey, Chris. Great. Miss you guys.
Missouri. Hi, Chris. Surviving Missouri.
Yeah, Chris said to me when I went to go get my water, he's like, he said laughing, he said it's pretty cool. He said I met both those guys at your place before I ever heard them on the radio. But yeah. Anyway, well, John, I know that you've got plans to be out here, and if everything goes as planned, I expect to see you with bells on, and I can't wait to spend some more time with you out here in the woods of Missouri. So.
Same with me, Mike. I look forward to it.
Same with me.
Rapidly closing. You know?
Oh my gosh, it'll be here before you know it. Hey, you know, you'll both get a kick out of this. You know, this whole idea of the singularity, right? The word was first used in the context that we're, you know, with the time wave and all this stuff, was used by this guy named Werner Vinge. Are you familiar with Dr. Werner Vinge?
No, I'm not.
Well, he's sort of a futurist, and he's a sci-fi writer, but he's also a PhD physicist and a pretty accomplished professional person. But anyway, he at least as far as I can tell, was sort of credited with using the term singularity with regard to exponential asymptotic growth of technology or advancement of technology and this sort of thing, right?
Uh-huh.
And one of the guys that hangs out here in Columbia is a fan of Werner Vinge's fiction. He likes to read his sci-fi books. And he said, Mike, you should really try to get Dr. Werner Vinge on the program. And so I sent him, I tried to get him to come to the program. So I sent him a note and said, you know, I'd really appreciate it if you'd consider coming on the radio show. And he sent me a note, real nice note back, and said, I'm sorry, you know, it's just not my style. It seems that these days I'm behind on every project that I'm working on, and I just won't be able to do it, Mike. But thank you. And so I just sent him a quick note back and said, God, it's almost as if time is speeding up or something. <You know>? And we had a little laugh about it, but anyway, it really does seem like that to me, and I find it so interesting that as we now sort of approach the 2012 time frame, and again, I hate to try to use that. I mean, I hate to think that we're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy or something. But either way, it doesn't matter, because the perception, at least on my part now in 2008, is that things are moving very rapidly and more so all the time.
Well, I think so. I think it's just a matter of experience. You don't have to try to make any attempt to extrapolate into the future at all, because just pay attention to what your senses experience are telling you. It's just an amazing time, and you know, I just find it very difficult to find any ground to stand on. It's the reference frame keeps changing faster than I can make adjustments, basically, is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
So I no longer know where my inertial frame is, you know. It's
Kent, what are you think with regard to this? I mean, are you feeling similar things, or
for a long time. I mean, even when I was a sort of corralled seminary student in Utah, you know, I read a passage in the Bible that said there will be a time when there is no time. And I can't remember too much about that phase of my life except little snippets like that. It's always impressed me up to the point where I asked by an elder back in the 60s, well, what do you guys mean when you say the calendar pooped out? And he said, our prophets our prophets couldn't go there into that space. We couldn't
see beyond it or something.
It isn't. They just could not go there. And then I guess come back with, I don't know how to interpret that, then come back with some sort of rational discussion about it. And I've experienced myself time dilation, time warping things, and like you guys say, man, it's speeding up.
Well, I think time is the least understood of any of the physical variables that we you know, have experience with. You know?
God, and, yeah, most people don't even consider it a variable at all. They don't even consider it in the equation.
It's true.
I mean, I went crazy and went on eBay and bought two dozen pocket watches, you know, trying to contain time, I think is what I was doing. So I started collecting pocket watches, and then I keep looking at it and see if they'll melt. But I carry a pocket watch, TikTok thing. But that taking
watch,
that talk...
That was given to me by my father, inherited from my father, but it... at 11 o'clock for the last 4 years at least, if not longer.
So it's right twice a day.
Right, it's right twice a day.
Oh, man. All right, you guys.
That's about what I feel, too. Maybe right twice a day.
if you're right twice a day, you're doing okay. My God, there are days when I think I haven't been right for days, it seems like. But. Anyway, I think that maybe we're all in the process of getting righted, so to speak, by like a ship gets righted, and I it's really weird. It is springtime, and although there are lots of nasty things going on as there typically are on this planet, I'm feeling a tremendous amount of good new energy and life force, and I'm really hoping that. You know, we can see some good results and changes this year. I'm convinced that we don't have to just say it's all more bad. You know.
I agree, Mike, and that's been my experience as well. And you know, I have to repeat what I said to, you know, the 15-year-old daughter of a good friend of mine about a year or so ago, when we were having similar conversations about you know, what's happening in the world and what our perceptions of what might happen are. And, you know, the 15-year-old's just sitting back, taking it all in. And at some point she says, what's going to happen? And I stopped and I said, you know, how do I answer this? You know, so the line that came to me came from the film 2010, in which the same question was raised regarding what this extraordinary phenomena that was happening on
Jupiter.
Jupiter, you know, essentially, you know, turning it into a star.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, something wonderful. And I said that not you know, from a patronizing perspective, but really believing, you know, that how do you tell, you know, somebody who's 15 just, you know, essentially coming into the world, anything about a process, you know, any kind of transforming process that's likely, you know, to affect her life for certain, you know, as well as many of the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know the specifics. Those are the facts of the matter. We don't know what the specifics are.
Right.
All we can really do is rely on what our instincts, our sensibilities, and to the degree that we can actually experience what I call the quantum field, you know, and any information that's part of that links us essentially to everywhere and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that tells me, okay, I mean, a lot of people have said the same thing. The experience, visionary experience that people have had regarding this time on planet Earth, is that it's an extraordinary nexus of space and time, unlike anything this civilization has ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not certain what the specific outcome is going to be, but in general, my feeling is that it's a very, very positive, expansive, evolutionary, transforming process for the planet.
Well,
it doesn't mean there's not going to be some painful stuff going on,
but
in general, I think it's a very hopeful time.
Well, I always think about the description of the caterpillar to butterfly that you made on the program one time, and I also think that you know, because we don't know the future, well, you might as well bet that it's going to be something wonderful, and whatever it is, you're going to participate in it. You've said it to me before. Whatever's coming, I'm in. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, you can look at it right away. So if you can look at it by saying, you know, look, there's no evidence to suggest or prove that one perspective over another is any better. Mm-hmm. Why not choose the most hopeful and positive and expansive perspective?
Mm-hmm. Until it proves otherwise, yeah.
Absolutely. Not only that, but because, you know, again, if you look at quantum theory,
mm-hmm.
you know, a positive perspective is likely to lead to a more positive outcome
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
than having a perspective that's about being defeated and, you know, everything going to hell and misery and all of the kind of thing that, you know, that I think a lot of people get hooked into.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, I mean, that's, you know, from my perspective, what keeps, you know, this kind of thing percolating in the collective. And, you know, I think, you know, it's really up to us to change that. You know, it's not going to be any leader, no matter how good they are. You know, it's going to be us as individuals making the changes in our lives, you know, and the relationships that we have,
mm-hmm.
you know, how we are in the world, and our worldviews and our stories, and all of that links together, spreads to the collective, and really helps to catalyze and energize real change.
All right, John. Well, I'm going to have to say goodbye to you, and you can say goodbye to Kent, and then I'll say goodbye to Kent, because I got to get off the air here in just a minute or two.
Right.
Well, glad to hear from you, John.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you as well, Ken. I'm glad you're doing better. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, John, for calling. I'll talk to
yep.
you soon.
Yep, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Dr. John Sheliak, thanks for calling, and on the web at Sheliak, or johnsheliak.com. Kent, that was a great surprise.
Yeah, what a great, you know, he really saved my butt. Sharing with me something beyond theory and concept and just telling me about what's happened in his life and
mm-hmm.
helped me make my decisions
mm-hmm.
recently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I meant when I tried to express my gratitude for people willing to do that.
Yeah.
And he's one of them. He's certainly a friend of both of us.
No doubt. All right. Well, look, my friend, you are about the closest one I got, and even though you're a long ways away, you're always right here with me, and I thank you for everything that you've done for me. That my big concern for you wasn't at all altruistic. My concern for you was my concern for me, because without you, I'm sort of bumming. So, so I'm very pleased that you're feeling well and you're still around. And I love you, my friend. And then we'll talk soon, and we'll figure out what's happening in June real soon. Okay.
Okay. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Everybody, Mr. Kent Stedman, www.cyberspaceorbit.com. A wonderful man, an amazing artist, and a collector and sharer of information like no other I've ever met in my life. Okay, a little bit after 2 o'clock, the crash landing normally comes right about now, but Ruth is taking the night off. So I'm going to put on a little bit of music here for you. You can listen in as long as you can. And in a moment, I will turn off the transmitter and shut down this radio station. Take care, everybody. It's been a pleasure. Mike Hagan, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.